back to another didactic episode of the Blue Line Brothers. I'm Fred.
I'm Frank.
And we are still, well, I'm still there and you're here, so.
No, actually, you're there and I'm here.
Okay, well, I'll get it straight one of these days. But we're still the Blue Line Brothers. Mm-hmm. And we're still on this glorious topic of gloom and doom and devil spawn and all kinds of stuff. And Frank brought up an excellent point after the last episode that we just seem to specialize in digression. we start out on a path, but we end up on the other side of the world somehow.
Yeah.
All the time.
Sometimes even on the other side of the universe.
Yeah, I think we were just about out of the Milky Way by the time the last episode ended.
Yeah, we were like, welcome to Andromeda.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Or maybe we went through the Stargate a couple too many times or something like that. But the thing is, I do need to bring up a point before we digress into, you know, some other topic. But part of this preparation, if you will, for this doom and gloom is actually, in my opinion, really, really important. Probably the most important aspect to all this prep is the spiritual aspect of it. And the reason I bring that up is, you know, my little escapade I had just about 2 years ago.
Was it 2 years ago?
It will be 2 years here in a couple of weeks.
I was going to say, it's right about this time, too,
isn't it? Yeah, beginning of December of 21. For those who may not remember, if you're just picking up on things, I dropped dead out of the blue. Had a seizure out of the blue. It was not something that was expected or anything. I did not have any underlying health issues or anything like that. But just as an example, and I bring this up because it can literally happen to anybody, but it happened to me, and I literally had a grand mal seizure in my apartment, my little tiny little one-bedroom apartment. Had double pneumonia at the time, and I wasn't found for about 3 days. So a couple of specialists said, hey, look, you should have been dead 3 times over. And now what I will say is, you know, I'm the kind of guy, especially now, you know, I can use that as an excuse in a humorous fashion that, yeah, I can't remember what I had for breakfast some days and some days I can. But the whole thing is I do remember a specific scenario that happened. And I cannot tell you what part of those 3 days this happened or how long it happened, but I was definitely not of this world for a specific period of time. And I say specific period of time because we only measure time here within this realm. Outside of this realm, there's no time. Literally, there's no time. I like the word literally a lot, just so you know. The whole thing is, I learned a lot from what I would consider a rather brief experience. And I've had now a couple of years to really kind of break things down in my mind about what happened, how it happened, and things like that. I love to overanalyze everything. So I'm always still trying to figure out things that I probably have no business attempting to figure out. But I learned a great deal. I've always treated that experience as a very, very large blessing within my life for a number of reasons. I'm not going to get into all that stuff. But the thing is, once again, kind of like the last episode that we started with is, hey, you have to, what might be seemingly negative can be extremely positive if we so choose to expound upon the positive side. Once again, you know, a lot of us, you know, anything painful is bad. You know, anything that might be risky is bad. And, oh, my gosh, don't do this. And just like the nurse, that when I first awoke, the first thing she looked at me, she said, I'm so sorry this happened to you. And I said, ma'am, please don't feel sorry for me because I don't. This is a huge blessing. I said, I know I look like a soup sandwich on a gurney right now, but, you know, and I sure as heck don't feel like it's a huge blessing. Definitely didn't feel good. But, you know, once I have time to think about this stuff, I know there's a huge blessing to this. And sure enough, that's exactly what came. That's how I look at it today. But a big gift, I received a couple of gifts, if you will. But one big gift is that my intuition just skyrocketed to a different level after that experience. And we kind of touched about that, you know, when we're talking about, well, facts or what your intuition says and vice versa. You know, you have to take everything into account when we're making assessments and stuff like that. But the whole thing is what I experienced literally verified, you know, my beliefs. I've been a very spiritual person all my life, not very religious at all. Once again, not trying to offend anybody, but I have a number of issues, if you will, you know, on a empirical level when it comes to religion, okay? And I'll get into that later. This isn't a religious channel or anything like that, but what I'm trying to get to is Jesus is real, in my opinion, and I've thought that long before my little escapade, excuse me, and what I experienced during my little escapade, as I call it, at least to me, verified a lot of those beliefs that I've had as a spiritual person. And we talk about faith, religious people talk about faith, and spiritual people talk about faith. But faith really isn't a whole lot of use to anybody if you don't exercise it, if you don't utilize it. And it's okay to wonder what's there and to ask questions, okay, what's beyond this realm? And that's why I call this world of which we live, a realm. And it was pretty funny. I got to tell a little story about Frank. When I awoke after talking to the nurse, I found this goofy-looking phone in my lap. And I didn't know what it was. I was like, have I been talking to people? Well, apparently I had. I didn't even remember. And Frank was one of those people with whom I conversed and had no memory. And so I do, before I go any further with this, I also want to mention that it's because of a few very, very close family members. I consider my friends my family members. So I had some very, very close family members that really went out of their way to take care of me when I didn't even realize I needed to be taken care of, because I was literally in another world for a while, and it took me a while to get back and to realize what the hell happened and all this stuff. So Frank is one of those people, and I'll just use first names, but Rick, John, and John. So there are a couple of people that really had no business stepping in to help out, but they did. So, and one big reason they did was, you know, keeping in contact with me while I was in ICU and all that, because they wanted to make sure that doctors were doing what they should be doing for me and stuff like that. So once again, when things like this happen, once again, part of that positive aspect of things is that you realize just who your friends are, and when you know, just what can happen and how people step in to take care of one another and all of that. So all of these things of which I speak are worth far more than any amount of tea in China or gold, silver, or what, platinum, whatever you might deem as valuable in your life. And that kind of hit home because Frank had called me within a few hours of me coming back to life, I guess is a good way to put it. And he said, "Hey, don't worry, we're taking care of your truck, and I made sure your firearms are safe. You know, you don't have to worry about anything." I said, "I don't care." And the yeah. first thing next thing I hear on the receiver actually, is, "Who the hell are you, and what the hell did you do to John?"
Actually, so. You went, "What?" "I don't care."
There you go.
"Who the hell is this?"
Yeah. What are you saying about my truck? I don't care. You can have it. You know. Yeah, but your guns. Oh, you can have them too. What? did I just hear you correctly? Yeah, you can have them.
You fell down and hit your head. Literally.
Well, where I was, there was no need for any material objects at all. And that's exactly what I felt and what I saw, which I'm not going to get into everything in this episode because that's really not the point. The point here is that with no matter if there's doom and gloom coming or not, or how it might be coming. Once again, the doom and gloom could be a natural disaster. I mean, it could be politically affected like we think it's going to be, blah, 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 or economic and all that stuff. But heck, we could have a meteor hit the planet, blah, 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 blah. Anything can happen. And that's the whole thing. You have to realize what's around you, how to prepare your mind and your soul. Okay, because if your soul and your mind are not prepared, then nothing else really makes a difference. I don't care if you're stocking food or ammo. Frank, we talk about people that have, you know, built up, millions of rounds of ammunition and all this stuff. They're going to take a stand in their house. And look, if you've got 50,000 CCP troops coming down the mountain at you, it's like you're either going to bug out or you're just going to take your stand and say, okay, fine. Once again, use a Clausewitz principle and say, okay, well, I got a hand to you and that's it.
That's where the 10 pounds of C4 come into play.
But you were talking about more like 100 and some odd pounds that you had, not just 10.
Well, it's 10-pound bundles.
Okay.
Anyway, I digress.
So, but that's the whole thing. And even Sun Tzu makes some comments about a mindset, if you will. And the person who no longer fears death is the most dangerous person, because he or she either no longer cares about what happens, you know, in their transition, or two, they already know where they're going. And there's nothing you can do to them within this realm that's going to change where they're going to be going. Okay. Well, because of my escapade, I fall into that ladder. Okay. I always had an idea. I mean, I prepared my mind for the crossover, if you will, or if you call it, I call it more of a graduation, because especially after what I saw and experienced, it is a graduation. Okay. Unless, of course, you're the devil spawn and you focus on that
Do you wear a cap and gown and move the tassel to the other side?
No, there was no tassels up there, believe it or not. Yeah, really? There's no tassels, but, and once again, I know this sounds silly, but, of course, everything was extrasensory, of course. So when I say if I was talking to somebody, I was not physically speaking to somebody or an entity. Okay. It was a thought that entered my mind that, hey, doofus, go over here. Sir, yes, sir, I will go over here. Or whatever, you know. So it was all extrasensory, okay? So, yeah, I had a thought in my head. Oh, you want me to do what? Okay. No, you don't. Okay, wait. You want me to wait? Okay, I'll wait. Nope, you want me to go back? Well, okay, I'll do whatever you want me to do. Okay. So I wasn't really speaking to anybody. On that note, it was, I do not know with whom I was communicating. Oddly enough, I remember exactly, what we communicated, and I remember exactly what was to my right, which was the most, in my mind, the most picturesque den, tongue and groove, mm-hmm. The banker's lamp, a nice big desk with, bookcases built into the walls, you know, and a bunch of my books, you know,
kind of like
there.
An old English,
type like an of, old, well, to yeah. me, that's like my favorite, place to be. Okay. If you will, in my mind, if I could, and once again, I'll be shopping for a house again here pretty soon. If I could get a fireplace and at least an extra room, I can call a den, you know, build it into like a little library, I would be in seventh heaven. Well, that's exactly what was presented to me when I was up there to my right. The feeling that I received, coming from that same area was, words do it zero justice at all, but the most positive, most warm feeling, that anybody could ever imagine. And it's like, I need to be there. I could not see anybody, but beyond the den. The den was what I could see. And the conversation I had was very brief. But basically, step over here. This is where you go. Well, no, wait a minute. Hold that thought.
The governor called.
Yeah. It was basically, look, you've done what you've needed to do. But we want you to go back. It was presented as an option to me. Would you go back? And I said, well, sure. I'm a team player. I'll do whatever you want me to do. Okay. And I wake up doing my best impression of a soup sandwich on a gurney. And I'm like, wow. And, of course, it took me a while to realize, you know, so they had rolled me over to my the regular room once I graduated from ICU. And that's when I really started to think about that. And I'm like, wow. I came back for this. Well, but I literally, heaven was right there, and all I had to do was just go there. You know, I mean, just poof, I'm there. And why the hell did I say I was going to come back? Why am I always trying to be a team player? You know what the whole thing is like? Honestly, you know, I got to think about this. And obviously, I've had plenty of time since to really let things sink in and think about this. But that's why I really wanted to get to this episode, okay? Because once again, I'm not a preacher. I'm not saying you got to be a certain religion or you got to follow this or not. No. But what I am saying is there is a spiritual world around us. And there is a whole lot of stuff beyond this realm, okay? And once again, this is just from my personal experience. Once again, you don't have to believe me. It's my opinion. Everybody has an opinion, just like we all have rear ends and all that stuff. I get it. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing is, since I've had time to think a lot about this stuff, having your soul is what goes wherever. Okay, once again, as the old adage says, you know, you don't get buried with a armored truck, you know, next to your grave.
Want to bet?
But now, in your case, Frank, I'm going to say, well, you can't get buried with a howitzer or 100 pounds of TNT what else? Well,
I'm going to be buried with 100 pounds of C4. And I'm going to have them put a dead man switch in my hand.
Well,
so as I decompose, my hand will relax and you will see me again. I guarantee.
In all of your blaze of glory, yes.
I will cover everywhere.
So that is your version of what do they call that? You know, where they burn everything and put you in an urn, you know, instead of an urn, you're just going to, you know.
Cremation?
Yeah.
I was thinking more along the lines of scorched earth, but yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, cremation is one man's scorched earth is another man's, you know,
I want to have, like, you know, like the fantasy football thing, you know? Pick a day when you think it's going to happen, and everybody put a dollar in a pot, and the winner closest, boom.
Kaboom, literally. Kaboom!
You know, like in Michigan when the river freezes, and they have to pick the day and the time when it actually the ice breaks and it starts to flow again.
Yeah, exactly.
Same exact thing.
So the whole thing is, the point that I really wanted to bring up is that, first and foremost, besides stocking up on potatoes and ammunition and Mickey Mouse boots and things like that, my whole point to this is, if your soul's not prepared, you're not going to have a superior mindset, period.
Well, there's another way to look at that, too. So, it doesn't matter what the natural or man-made disaster that you're facing. You can't do it alone. You're going to have a network of people to get through it. You know, I don't give a shit how many guns and bullets and, you know, everything else and cans of beanie weenies that you have. You can't do it alone. You have to have a network. You know, do they have to be in the same house? No. But you have to have somebody to lean on, because it's going to get to the point where you're going to get worn down, and that's when it's going to happen. The unspeakable will happen when you're at your weakest. But if you have two or three other people that, you know, you got in your little wheelhouse, your little network, everybody feeds off of each other. And then when the shit really hits the fan, that's when everybody comes together, and as a collective, you get through it.
Great point. And if you build your spiritual connection, you'll never be alone.
And if you can't get through it, you do as much damage as you can before it's over.
Exactly. Yeah, there is a point in time where you have to make tough decisions, and like you said, nobody's superhuman, nobody's Superman, and that's the whole point. You gain power through spiritualism. You bring Jesus into your life as you choose to do it. Because once again, what you do, and what your relationship is with Jesus is your business. It's nobody else's. But just a recommendation that you need assistance on every level. Well, I should say multiple levels, because we have here within our realm the physical level, so we would have our friends and family, mm-hmm. but a spiritual level on top of that. And it's just like I had three doctors pay me a visit at different times. One doctor I really, really like. I mean, I liked them all, but one doctor, he seemed to be the senior specialist assigned to me, because he said, look, we can't figure out what the heck's wrong with you. And I said, well, doc, I haven't been able to figure out what's wrong with me for 52 years, but you know, there's that. About your little situation here. I said, yeah. I said, and you know, that was one of the first things I asked. I said, okay, what stupid thing did I do to cause this? Because normally that's how I end up in the hospital or in a precarious situation, is something stupid that I did. And, the nurse kind of chuckled. She said, no, you didn't do anything wrong on this time around. I said, oh, okay. I said, well, at least I can relax a little bit. She said, yeah, relax. You know, I said, we gotta try to get you in the land of the living here. And, but that, one of the surgeon or the specialist came in and said, look, you know, you should have died three times over. And he said, the condition that you were in, you know, is the reason that you're alive right now. Because you should have died from the actual grand mal seizure, and then the double blah, blah, blah in the lungs, and then not being found for 3 days, and no fluids and food and blah, blah, blah. I should have been dead from that. And I said, well, doc, I said, I'd like to chalk this up to divine intervention, actually. Because I said, I know I'm not strong enough to make it through all that stuff, so... I said, it was divine intervention that did this. I said, the good Lord wanted me back here. And I said, and of course, once again, I didn't explain it. And I was still trying to work things out in my mind about what I experienced beyond this world and everything. So I didn't even bring any of that stuff up. And, that's it. He said, well, you know, had you not been in the physical condition that you were in, you know, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, maybe he had a hand in that too. You know, it takes motivation to get in the gym and exercise or do whatever. And I said, between divine intervention and getting my ass kicked a number of times, I said, that was enough, you know, motivation for me to get to the gym and do stuff and all that. But I said, it's a team effort, doc. And I said, and once again, I don't question anybody's, you know, beliefs or religion or anything like that. That's not what it's about. It's about, you know, you don't need to adopt a religion to find Jesus. You don't need anything. All you need is a desire to do it. That's it. You don't need to spit out silver dollars and recite Hail Marys. And once again, I'm sure I'm upsetting a whole lot of devout religious people in different areas of the world, but I don't care. the thing is, it is just that simple. And you don't have to advertise it. I'm talking about it for a reason, because I want to get it out there that there's one other schmuck like me out in the world that you know, went through some stuff and learned a lot from it, and that's part of that little deal, if you will. It's not really a deal or anything. It was just something that, hey, you know, talk about this, you know, get it out. And so if I can be a small poster child for God, then that's exactly it. That's what I want to be. But that's, I no longer have any, professional goals in life. Kind of like our last episode, we were alluding to some professional goals that were kind of modified because of our podcast here. Well, that's the same thing. After having that experience, I no longer have, there's far more important things in this world than my profession now, as far as what I accomplished or didn't accomplish or what have you. And that's the whole point to this, is we never will ever realize our reach within this world, you know, who we touch or how we touch them. But the whole thing is, you know, I was really devout into this profession of law enforcement. It means everything to me. Well, up until now, it no longer means everything to me, because I understand the limitations of that profession. Not that I dislike it or anything. It's still a beloved profession for me. But at the same time, that's a big reason we're doing this podcast, is to be real about things too. There's a lot more to life than you know, putting on that uniform and trying to, you know, be a good representative of the government, there to help people and all that crap. So, but at any rate, that's a big reason I wanted to do this episode, is to get that out there, that you don't have to be ensconced in some religion or anything like that to get a good spiritual connection and get your soul prepared for, great times, good times, bad times, indifferent times. It doesn't make a difference. But I do know, because of my experience now, I know exactly where I'm going. Excuse me. I know where a whole lot of us are going. I also know where a whole lot of us may not be going, because that's the other aspect to this that I wanted to bring up. Those of us that have been in the military and law enforcement, we've been into, not just sitting around twiddling our thumbs. We've actually been engaged with real bad guys, pure evil. We understand that pure evil exists within this realm, number one. Number two, this is a part of that notion, okay, that there is such a thing as pure evil, no matter how you live your life in your little bubble and try not to believe that bad things could ever happen to you, or the boogeyman doesn't exist, or what have you. This stuff really exists. There is a battle between good and evil. That's why we discuss a lot of the things we're discussing in our podcast, because these things are playing out within our realm for a reason. And a lot of these reasons, just like we've kind of alluded before, you know, they'll start to come to light when a lot of this crap really starts to hit the fan. And so once again, you're either going to be super shocked and you know, the shock and awe aspect of things, or you're going to sit back like some of us and go, yep, we try to tell you. Yep, exactly. Yep, that dude, I told you he was dirty, all yep. This stuff, and this is what's going to happen. But you want to be, like I said, it's just very important that you get your soul prepared. And like I said, you don't have to do major, you don't have to donate money to any organization. You don't need to wear a mask. You don't need to vote for anybody special. You just need to find Jesus and just build a relationship with him. That's it. That's all he wants you to do. And take it from a guy that's been dead. from what little I experienced, what I'm saying is the truth as I know it. Let's just put it that way. So, like I said, you can make your own decisions and all that stuff, but everything else, like you said, doesn't really amount to a hill of beans if you're not around to enjoy things or experience life or what have you. So that's the whole idea, is whatever doom and gloom is coming, there's going to be light on the other side of the of it. And, you know, if you try to prepare yourself, have the superior mindset, we might just get through it and we might just see the light on the other side.
So. Hey, all I know is my guardian angel, he constantly stays pissed at me and he drinks a lot.
I was, see, that's a great segue, into the second half of this. You know, that's actually, once again, I'm not getting into my relationship with God and all that stuff, but I will say, I give thanks to the staff of angels that I have torqued off in the 52 years that I've been here, because I know it takes an entire staff of angels to protect me from me. Because with all the stupid bull crap I've done in my life, like drive trucks off the side of mountains and drop over dead with seizures and all this other stuff. I've kept angels busy. I can only imagine some of the imaginative swear words that they've used to describe me. Because I can only, as a matter of fact, actually, I really don't want to try to imagine. What because
my many car wrecks, acts of stupidity. The latest one was when I wrecked my motorcycle.
You worked real hard on that one. I got to give you credit for that. I mean, you deserve props for that, because I'm going to tell you, man, I don't know of a guy. I mean, literally one day you're happy go lucky, da 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 da. And the next day, I go into, and that's how we got to know each other, working part-time in a specific location, undisclosed, of course. But I happened to show up, and it turned out to be, I think, the day after you had your crash. I show up, and did you hear what happened? I said, what happened? I said, there's always something happening. What the hell are you talking about? Oh, my gosh, Frank! What? What about Frank? He said, he's in the hospital. Okay, what'd he try to blow up? I mean, that was the first thing I thought of. It's like, okay, well, it was close. He was on a motorcycle. I said, yeah, I should have thought about that. I said, if it was an explosion, he tried to run into something or set a land speed record on his Harley or something. And sure enough, you know, and then I was actually kind of let down when you told me the story. Because it's not like you were doing Mach 45.
No.
It's not like that you were, you know, traversing, the mountain range or something like that. No. You were actually on your way home within a mile of your house.
No, it was within a block.
Within a block, and you had something in a row, boom, bam. And it's like, you got to be kidding me. I mean.
Okay, here's the deal. I was going through the apex of a curb, and there was this demon spawn of a cat.
Oh my God.
Decided to come out, and there was nothing I could do. So I hit it, and the thing, it just buckled, and down I went. I slid, hit the curb. My whole side of my face and my shoulder was like, hamburger. Shattered my knee. As it is. As of today, I still have, 9 screws and 2 or 3 plates and all that other stuff in there.
You're just about to the level we could consider you part bionic.
But the cool thing is I can take refrigerator magnets and stick them to my knee.
You were talking about that before, but let's go.
My knee and down the side of my calf.
But let's back up for a second. Let's not gloss over the actual crash for a second. Okay? Describe in detail how you disembarked yourself from the bike.
After I stopped sliding?
Well, before you... Well, you were you sliding with the bike, or did you disembark the bike and then slide?
Oh, no. So when I was going around the curb, the cat, it made my handlebars turn, which pushed me all the way down, and my foot hit the concrete.
Gotcha.
And it sucked me underneath there. So when I'm sliding, my face, my shoulder, were they're leaving skid marks along the road.
Right. Your entire right side was hamburger.
And the thing is, I was conscious through the whole thing. I could hear it. I could feel it. But it didn't hurt. That was the weird part. And then the momentum and the speed was just enough that when my knee made contact with the curb is what shattered it. And then I went over the curb through a little stretch of yard into a side road. And that's where I had to push it off of me. And as I'm standing, you know, I stood up as best I could on one leg. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, okay, let me... I somehow lifted it up, and, you know, the paramedics, and there was, I think, a constable showed up. And I said, it won't start. I got to turn it off. It's leaking gas. So I'm sitting there trying to shut the petcock off, and... Oh, yeah. It was interesting. And the paramedics pulled up, and they went, oh, dear God. Yeah.
You've got an ear hanging off of your head?
Yeah, my right ear was... the easiest way to explain it to you is when you see a puppy, and he's got the little ear that hangs down. Yeah,
the flapper.
Okay, but mine wasn't just bent. It was literally hanging off of me. They had to sew my ear back on. I had to sew my eyebrow back on, and then the whole side of my right side of my face was it looked like hamburger.
And say, what movie was that? The bad guy, what, one of those Bond movies where he, like, it wasn't like Two-Face from Batman, but it was, you had that look on that, you know, like the pitted, you know, like grater look.
Yeah, well, the cool thing, well, not so much cool, but as I was sitting in the hospital in the ER, they had to actually take a sponge, not unlike the one you would clean dishes with, and scrub the rocks out of my face and my arm and shoulder and everything else.
I was going to ask you how much of your clothing became embedded in your
wound. Actually, not much.
Really?
Mm-mm. Because I just had a t-shirt on. And it quickly wore away, so...
Right,
it was like, oh, look at that nice skin. Let's just run it across the... Yeah.
Now you're a cheese grater look.
Yeah, I still have a spot on my shoulder that is about 9 shades lighter than the rest of the surrounding skin.
Ah.
Yeah.
So you have a few...
And my cheekbone right here, I have a... To this day, I still have a divot. It's about the size of my thumb, right there. And in the right light, you can see it just dips down.
Now, how long were you supposed to be off work for recovery?
They said anywhere from 8 to 12 months.
And how long was it in reality when you showed back up to work?
Like 3 months.
Right. If that?
Yeah.
Because I don't think it was even 3 full months, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I went in for one of my checkups after surgery and everything. And I'm sitting on the little doctor table. Doc comes in, looks at me, looks around the room, looks out in the hallway, and goes, where's your wheelchair? At home. Where's your crutches? At home. How'd you get here? I walked. So I had to prove to him that I could walk. And I walked down the hall, turned around, came back, walked back in the room, jumped back up on the bed, and he goes, I suppose you want to go back to work too, don't you? Yeah. When do you want to go back? I said, I think this was on a Thursday. I said, how about Monday? Give me the weekend to kind of relax. So, yeah. But now, here's the thing. I had plenty of practice. Because I've had multiple knee surgeries before this. So,
I was going to get to that. You
had to play the game and work the knee and get it going. So,
well, that here's something that we're both kind of guilty. You far more so than I.
No,
I only really had one experience. But you have a nasty habit of beating the crap out of doctors.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Yes, I I have punched and kicked a few doctors in my time.
Yeah. Just a few.
Well, and then when I had my wreck, I actually kicked one, but it was a nurse.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, when I got out of the emergency room, they put me into my room, and I had just shy of 24 hours before I actually went into surgery. So I had this, my right leg, and I had it propped up and bent just right to where it didn't hurt. And, you know, it didn't really hurt too much thanks to the Dilaudid. But anyways, so I'm here. They came in. They were going to get me ready for surgery. And this nurse, I don't know what the hell she was thinking. She reached out, grabbed a hold of my ankle and my foot of my right leg and pulled on it. Like, I'm going to straighten your leg.
That's a good idea.
I don't know what happened. My left foot connected to the side of her head and... Yeah, it was interesting.
Hmm. Yeah, so you were one of the few people that had to enter surgery, the surgical room with the armed.
No, they didn't really arm guard ones. But the funny thing is, so after that happened, she left, and they went on about their business, got me ready, and then when I got up, I think it was like two. So I was on the fourth floor. The surgery was on the sixth floor, I think it was. I got up there, and they had already heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
The doc and the anesthesiologist, all of them, they were kind of standing in the hallway, and the nurse that was wheeling me in told him what room I was in. He goes, "Oh, you're the one that kicked her in the head." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "We're going to take really good care of you."
Uh-oh, what's that mean?
And I went, that could go one of two ways. In a good way or a bad way? And he said, "Yeah, she's not very well liked." I said, "Oh." I said, "Well, in that case, here's the deal. Make sure you put me under before you even touch that leg." He goes, "Not a problem." Pulls out that magical little syringe, hooks it to my IV, and squirts me up. And he goes, "Do you feel that?" And I go, "Not yet." Seriously? I go, "Yep, not yet." Squirts a little more in there. I said, "You're going to have to do more than that because this stuff doesn't really work too well on me." I ended up getting the whole syringe before it actually started to tickle the back of my neck.
Oh, my gosh.
And he said, "How you feeling?" I said, "Well, I'm kind of feeling a little loopy right now. Why don't you give me just a little bit more of that, and I'll be well on my way, and you can do whatever the hell you want to do to me." So he gave me a little bit more, and he said, "That's about it. That's you're at the limit right there." I said, "That's good, because I can feel it." I said, my leg is complete. I don't care. I remember I tried to lift my leg, but I was just lifting my thigh, and my leg was just dangling like a... He goes, "Just put that back down and relax. Let us." They wheeled me into the surgery room, and you know you have to go from one bed to the other. And I remember I sat up and I go, "Hey, you want me to move my fat ass over there? Because I will." And he goes, "No, lay down." They grabbed the sheet, pulled me over, and they got me all ready. And he goes, "Okay, I'm going to get you going." He said, "Why don't you go ahead and..." I said, "Don't tell me to count down backwards. That's the dumbest thing ever. Just hit me so I can..." I was out. I was done. Woke up, you know, however many hours later, and I was wrapped up from my upper thigh down to my ankle and had it all propped up and went, "Well, shit. This is fun." And then had one of those little, I call them a candy striper, little volunteer girl came in. And I had the right side of my face was covered. And, of course, my ear was bandaged up. Well, I couldn't see very good. So, in my smart brainiac, I started taking all that stuff off. She came around the corner and opened up the little curtain, and she goes, oh, I was like, hold on, am I that bad? And she goes, no, I just wasn't expecting it. I was like, well, thank you very much. What can I do for you? I was just coming to see, you know, would you like your dinner? And I was like, yeah, just set it over here. Thank you. And she put it on the tray. and then, so I spent that night. The next morning is when I started my antics.
Oh.
I was not supposed to get out of bed, but I had to take a leak, so I got out of bed.
Mm-hmm. Sounds familiar.
And I hobbled to the bathroom. They came in, they saw the bed empty, like, where in the what? Is he, where's he at? And I remember I kind of leaned back and looked out the door. I go, hi, taking a leak. You're not supposed to be out of bed. And I said, well, what do you want me to do? Piss on myself? No, we have a like the little handy jug thing. I was like, no, I'm good. And I hobbled back, and then they made the mistake, and they brought me a wheelchair.
Oh, no.
So
yeah, doing wheelies in the hallway.
I got out of bed and got in a wheelchair and propped my leg up, and I'm wheeling down to the nurse's station. I said, hey, I'm ready to go home. I want to, well, I was supposed to stay 48 hours after surgery.
The one surgery took care of everything then?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the just big scar that goes all the way down. Yeah.
Well, I mean, your ear as well as your leg. And
well, they sewed my ear back to my head, and just enough to make it grow back.
Oh, okay.
I was supposed to go have plastic surgery on my ear because, you know, you can still see the seam where they sewed it back, but... I went home that night.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they got tired of hearing my mouth. So. I kid you not, about every 15, 20 minutes, I'm wheeling down the hallway until they took my wheelchair away. Well, in that room, it was kind of, it almost reminded you of like one of those extended stay rooms. There was a chair that had wheels on it. Mm-hmm. Like an office chair.
Yeah.
Oh, don't think I didn't have my fat ass in that chair.
Wheeling yourself down the hallway again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wheeled all the way down to the nurse's station. You know, the desk is up here, and I'm sitting down, and I, hey.
Time to go home.
It was the nurses. They changed different, you know, a different group, and I said, hey, yeah, I'm in room 443, whatever I was in. I said, I am ready to go home. Well, you're not slotted. I said, no, you're missing the point. I'm going to go home. So, can you get the doctor? Yeah, they sent me home that night. They were like, we're done. We're done with you. Get out.
We've officially had enough.
Yeah. Every surgery, I mean, when you open my file, you know, they have me labeled as a combative. I don't know why. I mean, come on, you come in, you pull on my leg.
Not just a kick to a female nurse's head.
Hey, that was a reflex. It wasn't intentional.
No, we're talking about, a handful of visits to the VA, where, once again, an armed... VA law enforcement officer.
Two of them.
Get summoned to your room.
Two of them.
Yeah. 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 Folks, just remember the story. You know, in with future episodes or seasons or whatever. Mm-hmm. No matter how long we might be in existence as the Blue Line Brothers, just remember some of these stories about Frank. Here. because we're not really embellishing anything. We're exposing the truth.
Actually, there's no embellishment. It's kind of like I'm holding back a little bit, you know?
Yeah, what I'm saying.
If I told everything, oh, Jesus,
That's the thing. The truth, as we've mentioned before, the truth can be ugly.
But it's funnier now.
Oh, it's funnier than heck. I mean, but just remember, you know, there are a few lessons in life here. You know, don't beat up your doctors before they're done fixing you.
Hey, sometimes
because you may get an ear sewn to your ass or something like that.
Sometimes they deserve it.
Oh, trust me, I'm with you on that. I've had some very negative experiences.
The first one that I kicked was I went in to get an ingrown toenail cut out.
Something innocuous enough.
Yes. And when he went to numb up my toe, it was like he stabbed it, pushed the needle all the way across my toe, and then he didn't pull it out to change directions. He just pulled it out, you know, to the start point and then turned the needle and jammed it. Oh, no. He got a size 11.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Nope. So, yeah.
There's no excuse.
I mean, there are two things that I don't like people touching them. My feet and my back, period. It's just, and no. That was the beginning of it.
So, yeah. Now, you haven't done any major damage, have you? I mean, as far as broken bones or...
Well, other than my wreck...
As far as to other doctors and stuff.
Oh, I've left a few lasting marks, like black eyes, fat lips.
Okay.
Things of that nature. Then, of course, there's the mental aspect of it. I'm sure they think twice now before they...
I would think
do something stupid to somebody else.
You know, as far as the VA is concerned, I wouldn't be surprised if they have posters of you up in certain areas of the hospital saying,
do not antagonize him.
Yeah, here are the, you know, kind of like a rap sheet for patients, uh-huh. You know, like, hey, beware of, feet flying through the air, fists.
So the doctor that I have now, she actually asked me, she goes, why are you labeled a combatant? And I was like, do you really want to know? And she goes, yeah. So I gave her the whole story and she goes, don't hit me or kick me. I said, hold on. It's the totality of everything. It's not like I just, hey, I don't like you. Boom, hit you, kick you, whatever. There are reasons.
There's always something behind. Something initiates the action.
There's always,
yes.
Cause and effect type of thing. So,
mm-hmm.
She kind of, it was all a little half-hearted, but, you know, she kind of chuckled about it. I was like, yeah.
A rather nervous chuckle, yes.
Oh, yeah, she was a very nervous chuckle. I said, don't worry, you're fine. You're good. You're the longest reigning doctor that I've had in the whole VA system.
That's an accomplishment.
I've actually had this one for working on 4 years now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, the longest doctor you've had, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
I think the shortest one that I had was like 6 months.
Well, yeah.
Come in, talk to her, you know, and then, of course, you know, you get a whole new one, and it's like starting over again, then that doctor goes away, and then you get a new one, and then you're starting over again. So, yeah, it kind of tends to kind of bend you out of shape. But, yeah.
Well, these are a few examples of what was that famous phrase? I know back in the 80s, adapt, overcome, persevere. Mm-hmm. Was that it? Adapt, overcome, persevere. Yeah. Here are a couple of examples of doing that, I should say. Once again, you know, having a positive outlook on things, or trying to, focus on the positive aspect of things to get through stuff, kind of painful stuff, stuff that you can look back on and wonder, what the heck? Also equipment malfunctions.
Well, see, there's.
Sorry, always, folks, you can't see what just happened, but
there's a saying that used to kind of come around when I was in the Army. You know, it's like, you embrace the suck and move on.
There you go, embracing the suck.
Okay, yes. And you know, it's like people go, "What the hell does that mean?" You're in a situation that sucks. What are you going to do? Cry about it? Or are you just going to deal with it, put your head down, and go from where you are to your next point and move on?
There you go.
That's the only thing that you can do. And when, you know, this next batch of shit that comes about, that's the only thing you can do. You got your network of people, a network of friends. Together, you're going to embrace the suck, and you're going to go, well, this really sucks. Let's move on. Let's get through this.
Well, here's the other aspect to that, too. let's just take a moment, excuse me, and think about what happens when you lose your stash, which is very easy to do. Okay, you lose your stash of ammunition, for instance, or you lose your stash of food because some, you know, group of thugs came through and found your stuff, stole it, whatever, handed it out to a bunch of Hell's Angels, you know, whatever. What are you going to do if you lose your stuff? Or you're out hunting, for instance, and maybe the bad guys take over your house while you're gone. What are you going to do?
Well, if you're a lone wolf and you're by yourself, you're shit out of luck.
Well,
but if you have your network, then guess what?
That's the thing. But see, that's the thing. You have to be able to think through issues. Okay, that's the whole thing. Are you just going to give up? Holy crap, we're here.
Most people would.
That's my point to this.
Most people would just...
A superior mindset doesn't give up. See, that's the whole thing. Yeah, that's... Once again, you know, we'll dive in a bit deeper with Sun Tzu and Behold the Pale Horse and stuff and a few other upcoming episodes. But that's the whole thing. If you do not have your superior mindset and if you do not have your soul prepared for, you know, the methyl ethyl bad stuff, then what good is anything else?
Well, so. And on top of that, in any situation, doesn't matter, you know, it could be something as simple as you get pulled over by the cop, okay? That individual always thinks that this is the worst case scenario. Like, oh my God, I'm going to go to jail, I'm going to do this. Okay, well, you know, you just lost all of your stash. You're like, oh my God, I'm going to die, I'm going to starve, I'm going to this and that. No. Is the possibility that you could starve? Yeah, it's possible. But that's when you have to stop, rethink it, and go, wait a minute. Okay, I have this and that and other avenues to go about.
That, yeah, we're going to dig into a little bit of that in the next episode. Because there are some things that we can do. For instance, our minds are a lot more powerful than what we give them credit and things like that. So, but we're just about to the end of our time, so.
Well, that went quick.
It went very quick. Quickly. You know, rehashing some wonderful moments in life, you know, time just zips right by. But at any rate, I think I'm still Fred. And
I might be Frank.
Might be Frank. You're still here and I'm still there. So I guess until next time, we're the Blue Line Brothers.
Yes, we are.